If making it easy to be an illegal alien isn't enough, how about offering a reward for being an illegal immigrant? No sane country would do that.
No sane country would do that. But a Democrat Party would. Hey-ho! Hello and welcome into this Tuesday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Mark Congleton here, your sometimes humble host for this hour of observation, insight, and absurdity. Hope you're doing well. Hope you and yours are fine. And that everything is going nicely for you. It is Tuesday, the 6th day of October 2020. Halloween will be here before you know it. How's Halloween going to work for you this year? Do you think your neighborhood's going to have any action? Any kiddos out rambling? Anything happening? That's tough to say. For us, we usually don't have, really, in the last several years, any kids come by our house because of where our house is located. The people would prefer to load their kids up in the family truckster and head off to anywhere else, just because of the way our area is laid out. We're not in a subdivision, so it's a little more difficult. There's no street lights here. You know what I mean? We're kind of out in the boonies, and it's not like I don't have neighbors. I have neighbors on both sides. I have them behind me. I have them across the street, but there's no street lights. There's no sidewalks. There's, you know, it's just we're kind of out away from everything. And so what happens is that families load the kids up and they take them to the subdivisions where they have street lights and sidewalks and the like. And usually those places, they get all into it and they decorate everything for Halloween and they have a blast with it. Some places they set up, you know, all kinds of stuff to scare the kids as they come through the yards. And they're having fun with it. But around here, not so much. Now, half a mile away from us, there was a new subdivision built some years back. And that saw a lot of attention when it first started up, but not so much anymore. And also churches in the area in the last bunch of years, they've set up the trunk or treat programs where families from the church will pull in their vehicles and they'll open up the back of them and they'll have them all decorated for Halloween. And the kids come to the parking lot at the church and they just do their trick or treating from vehicle to vehicle. And that's kind of cool. And it's a safe environment and they're church members. And so you pretty much know you can trust everybody. So you don't have to worry about what your kids are grabbing. And that's been a big thing, but around our place, we bought, one bag of candy last year and the doorbell didn't ring once, not a single time. Now, the last place we had, the last place we had, we lived in a subdivision. We had the street lights, we had the sidewalks, and on Halloween, you had better hope you got home and parked in your garage pretty early, or you were going to have a lot of trouble getting home. And that happened to me one time when we lived there, where I had to run an errand late in the afternoon. And I didn't think I was going to get home because there were cars parked down both sides of the street. There were van loads and SUV loads of kids being loaded and unloaded. I think there was actually somebody pulling a trailer, an open trailer with hay bales and stuff and kids piled up on it going around to do trick or treating. There was all kinds of craziness going on in that neighborhood. And we got slammed, just absolutely slammed that week and or that year. And it's just, so we don't live in a situation like that anymore. Our life situation's changed. We moved out to the country and we just don't have that going on anymore. But I wonder this year, what with the Rona scare, what's going to happen? Are we going to see any trick-or-treaters, even in those high traffic areas? Any? I kind of doubt it. I really do. Because even though the kids we have seen from what we have learned this year, the kids aren't the ones to worry about or worry about transmitting the coronavirus. We don't have to really worry that much about them catching it or transmitting it, because they don't seem to, they're just not affected like the rest of us are. The older you get, the worse it is for you. But even in spite of that, I think the fear factor is going to kick in and people are just going to keep their kids at home. I just kind of think that's what's going to happen. But I bet a lot of people go out and buy candy anyway. I mean, wouldn't you? I mean, come on. What happens with the leftovers? You know. You get to munch on it for a while, don't you? Yeah. See? I know. It's just going to be a weird year this year for Halloween. It's been a weird year anyway. 2020 has just been bizarre. I don't have to tell you that. You know that. It's just been a bizarre year. And politically speaking, it's been a bizarre year. We've been watching a political race. We've been watching the campaigns for president. I saw a spot this morning, a TV spot on Fox News this morning, early for Joe Biden. And I just sat there and shook my head and laughed all the way through it, because the whole thing was just fabrication. It was claims that Joe Biden had been part of things that never really did anything beneficial for the country. Oh, Joe Biden was involved with this, was responsible for that, did this. And I'm thinking, well, great. We probably pulled the plug on half that stuff anyway, because it was hurting people. And we're watching them make all these crazy claims about Trump. It's just nuts. I was looking at the list of things to talk about today, and on the top of the list is the 20 times that President Trump has condemned white supremacy. And we'll get to that in just a minute, okay? Just a couple of minutes. It's about 3 minutes of audio I think you should hear, and I'll include it in the show notes today so you can actually have access to it yourself. Joe Biden's fumbled again, and you know the thing. He's this time it's about who gets to choose the members of the Supreme Court. A Black Lives Matter co-founder has something to say about Joe Biden. There's a leftist Harvard professor who's pushing a scenario that is absolutely frightening if you don't understand how our system works. And that's what is obvious by what this guy had to say. We'll take a look at that and possibly more as we continue with this Tuesday edition of the Daily Perspective podcast. But first up, let's take a listen to these 20 times. It's a video, actually, and I've got the link so you can watch the video. If you'll get the show notes today, it's 20 times that President Trump, even before he was president, condemned white supremacy. And it starts off with a little kind of introduction.
He has yet once to condemn white supremacy, the neo-Nazis. He hasn't condemned a darn thing.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for him.
We've got David Duke just joined, a bigot, a racist, a problem.
Would you repudiate David Duke?
Sure. David Duke and robocalls are out again. The white supremacist movement supporting you. Do you have any words for that?
Well, I disavow.
David Duke endorsed me? Okay. All right. I disavow. Okay.
When we looked at it and looked at the question, I disavowed David Duke. So I've disavowed David Duke all weekend long on Facebook, on Twitter, and obviously it's never enough.
So are you prepared right now to make a clear and unequivocal statement renouncing the support of all white supremacists?
Of course I am.
When Chris joined, we had a news conference, and they asked me the exact same question. I said, I disavow. I disavowed then. I disavowed today on ABC with George Stephanopoulos. I disavowed again.
David Duke is a bad person who I disavowed on numerous occasions over the years.
I totally disavow the Ku Klux Klan. I totally disavow David Duke. Ultimately, he got to the Ku Klux Klan, which obviously I'm going to disavow.
I reject David Duke, rejected David Duke. I've rejected the KKK, the Ku Klux Klan.
David Duke is saying to his supporters and followers, vote for Donald Trump. White supremacists are saying, vote. Do you want those votes?
No, I don't want them, and I don't want him to say it.
And you don't want the supporters?
No, I don't want anything.
What do you think of white supremacists, by the way?
I don't like any group of hate.
David Duke announced his Senate candidacy,
claiming your agenda.
Are you ready before you ask the question?
Newt Gingrich said every Republican should repudiate this guy, no matter what it takes.
And I do. Rebuked. Is that okay? Rebuked.
Rebuked.
Done.
Done.
Do you want white supremacists to vote for you?
No, I don't at all. Not at all.
His campaign is denouncing a show of support from the KKK's official newspaper, as in the Ku Klux Klan.
In the same New York Times interview, he denounced white supremacists. He denounced the neo-Nazis who support him.
Racism is evil, and those who cause violence in its name are criminals and thugs, including the KKK. Neo-Nazis, white supremacists, and you had people, and I'm not talking about the neo-Nazis and the white nationalists, because they should be condemned totally. I spoke out forcefully against hatred, bigotry, and violence, and strongly condemned the neo-Nazis, the white supremacists, and the KKK.
President Donald Trump signed a congressional joint resolution that condemns white supremacy, neo-Nazis, and other hate groups.
In one voice, our nation must condemn racism, bigotry, and white supremacy.
Any group of hate, I don't like it. Any group of hate, I am, whether it's white supremacy, whether it's any other kind of supremacy, whether it's Antifa, whether it's any group of hate, I am very concerned about it, and I'll do something about it.
Now, over and over and over again, we hear the talking heads on the news channels asking the same questions. Different people asking the same questions again and again and again. Now, in the last week, we've also seen this come up again, because these self-important newscasters find their time in front of the camera in the press room at the White House, and they ask the press secretary, Kayleigh McEnany, if the president will denounce these things. And he's denounced them over and over and over and over again. As you just heard, that was 20 different times. 20 different times. Now, when you see the president being interviewed on television and some jackwagon at some news channel asks him about white supremacy and asks him about bigotry and asks him about this stuff, you see him get ticked off. Gee, why do you think he gets ticked off? Because he has again and again and again denounced white supremacy. He's denounced racist groups. He's denounced them by name. He's actually declared a few of them as hate groups and domestic terrorist organizations. Again and again, he is asked the question. So we have to realize it's not a question. It's an accusation. Think about it. It's not a question. It's an accusation. The progressive press is not interested in the facts. They're interested in promoting the leftist agenda. And the leftist agenda, the narrative is that Donald Trump is a racist. Remember, from the beginning, from the campaign, before the 2016 election, one of the talking points that was put through the focus groups and proved to be the most effective was racism. And so since that time, they've been flying the racism flag anytime they talk about Donald Trump. If you, by some chance, are brain damaged and watch The View, then you have seen the harpies on The View use the racism tag quite often. He's a racist, he's a misogynist, he's a xenophobe, they use this all the time. So do the rest. When you read, like I do, if you're a news junkie, you read articles all day long, you see the president referred to as many things. It is clear from his record that he is not. And you and I have just listened to 20 examples of him condemning something that today someone in a press conference will ask about. Excuse me, but is the president willing to condemn? And he has multiple times done that. So it's not a question. It's an accusation. It's a condemnation. Nothing more, nothing less. Daily Perspective podcast. About 18 minutes into this Tuesday edition for October 6th. Wow. Scanning social media. You know, I am firmly convinced that one of the biggest problems we have as a society today, just a society, and not only here, not here in the U.S., just here, but everywhere that Twitter and Facebook are available, every nation on earth where those platforms and things like them, they're available, all of those places, that one of the chief contributing factors to the decay of the society is social media. And I see this every day where people, just because they're not face-to-face with others, will say things that are just vile, absolutely vile. And if you happen to have a high enough status, let's say you're on Twitter and you've got a blue check mark and you've got a sizable audience, so to speak, you will find yourself on a regular basis getting messages from Twitter about attempts to hack your account. This is something I've been seeing a lot in recent weeks. And that is that, for example, James Woods, if you've been listening for a while, you know who James Woods is. He was an actor, is an actor. He's been in a bunch of movies. He was in, go look up the Jodie Foster movie, Contact. He played a senator in the movie Contact. A not very likable guy, and he's very good at that particular character. You like Disney flicks? He was in the movie Hercules. He was Hades. He was the and he was really funny as a character in that movie, voicing that character. But he's been in so many things, and he's an excellent actor. He's also a conservative, and he pulls no punches, and he's tweeting every day. He's been, because liberals have lied about him several times, he has had his account canceled at one point, and now he's back. But I see him two or three times a week post a little something where he's gotten a message from Twitter about multiple attempts to log into his account with the wrong password. Now, he's not the only person I've seen this happen to, but it's happening. People on the conservative side who are gaining some notoriety in social media. And what happens is that liberal people, progressive people, don't like what they have to say. And so they try to suppress what they have to say, and they report them. And Twitter finds nothing that breaks the rules, so to speak, that doesn't cross the community standards, that doesn't transgress any guidelines, and Twitter doesn't shut them down. And so when that fails, they try other means. And one of those things is to go try to log into that person's account and hijack it so that they can't use it anymore. And that results in the actual account owner getting a message saying, we've seen multiple logins to your account with a wrong password, and just giving them a little heads up. And this happens to these people all the time because progressives don't want any message to be relayed anywhere in public except their message. Everything else is wrong. Everything else is evil. And everything else must be put down. It must be suppressed. It must be removed from public view. This is how progressives think. And it's interesting to me that these people who suppress information, point their fingers at other people and accuse them of doing exactly the same thing. It's projection, something they do constantly. Accusing other people of their transgressions. But social media, as I said, is probably the worst thing to happen to us since the party line telephone. And, okay, I'm going to be honest with you here. I'm really not quite old enough to have been involved and heard conversations on a party line. I'm not that old. But at one time, before everybody carried their phone in their pocket, the telephone systems were shared. And it used to be a joke that in rural areas, people would sit around and listen in on the party line. And they were shared. They would listen to conversations among other people and get good gossip that way. And then they'd go share their gossip over the fence with their next door neighbor. And social media is social media is the worst thing to come along since that, I think, because it allows people to be vile and not have to face anybody. They say things and they do things that they would not say or do if you were standing in front of them. I'll condition that. They wouldn't say it to your face or do it to you unless they had a mob of people around them to support them, which is what we're seeing happen on the streets of liberal cities in America right now, where people are crossing into sidewalk restaurant seating areas and accosting customers. They wouldn't do that if it was just them alone on the street. The ones that do end up, and it does happen every now and then, you do see a news story about some idiot doing that, and that person ends up getting arrested. But when they've got a mob of people, it becomes a protest, and the law enforcement in those liberal cities just say, oh, they're just protesting. That's their right. Well, no, they have the right to peaceably assemble, not to disrupt the lives of other people in the way they're doing it. But progressives are going to do what progressives are going to do. As Forrest Gump's mother famously said, stupid is as stupid does. And speaking of stupid is as stupid does, can we talk about Joe Biden for a minute? Just a couple of minutes here. Over at westernjournal.com, Aaron Earhart has an article called Joe Biden botching the Constitution. And here's what she has to say. In an ideal world, lawmakers and politicians would have a strong working knowledge of the Constitution of the United States. After all, members of Congress and the president all swear an oath to uphold and defend the nation's most foundational legal document. In the real world, unfortunately, many politicians appear constitutionally illiterate, even those who have ostensibly studied the Constitution in depth. Today's culprit is Joe Biden, who was interviewed last Wednesday by anchor Shannon Perrine of Pittsburgh's WTAE-TV. During the interview, Biden claimed that the Constitution, quote, says the American people get an opportunity to choose who they want on the Supreme Court by who they pick as their senator and their president. However, the Constitution says no such thing. Rather, the Constitution allows the president to nominate and, with the advice and consent of the Senate, appoint Supreme Court justices. The Constitution does not give the American people a say in picking justices. It doesn't even suggest that senators have a right to grill potential justices based on their ideology or political affiliation. The president nominates a candidate. If the Senate consents, the president can appoint that candidate. That's it. Joe Biden, who has not only been in government for 47 years, but also graduated from Syracuse Law School in 1968, near the bottom of his class, and claims to have taught constitutional law for over 20 years, he claims, should know this. In fact, he supported this process in 2016. To the extent Americans, quote, get an opportunity to choose who they want, end quote, through their senators and president, the people have already spoken. Republicans hold both the Senate and the presidency. In 2018, shortly after President Donald Trump's last Supreme Court pick, Brett Kavanaugh was confirmed to the highest court. Americans voted to keep the Senate red. Moreover, Biden's claim is belied by the fact that so far, he has refused to release a short list of his own potential Supreme Court nominees or answer whether, if elected, he would pack the Supreme Court with additional justices. Perrine asked Biden if he supports court packing. Biden refused to answer, just like he refused to answer during the debate. he said, you know, that's exactly what they want me to talk about, so we don't talk about how they're violating the Constitution now. I'm not going to play Trump's game. Right now, my entire focus is seeing to it that the American people get a chance. The election has already started. To have their way on who the next Supreme Court justice is, and that's what I'm focused on. Now, he's not going to give us a list of who he would nominate. How are we supposed to have a say if we don't know who he would nominate? We supposed to just go blindly support an unnamed nominee because he or she is Biden's choice? And his suggestion that the Republicans are the ones violating the Constitution here is laughable, considering that every major Democrat, including Biden himself, supported voting on a Supreme Court nominee in an election year in 2016. It's the Daily Perspective Podcast. Tuesday, the 5th day of October 2020. Oh, man. Scanning social media in the break, I ran across this story from over at theblaze.com. And it's really, really priceless. You remember Kirstie Alley? She was on Cheers. She played, what, in that second Star Trek movie, The Wrath of Khan, she was Lieutenant Savick. Look Who's Talking was one of her movies, and there have been others. She's been around for a while. And she is a conservative. Bless her heart, she's a Scientologist, so pray for her, but she is a politically a conservative, and from time to time, she is just a gem. Well, she trampled on criticism from a CNN reporter leveled against the president over his actions after returning to the White House from the Walter Reed Medical Center. President Donald Trump took his mask off before cameras after he arrived at the White House. Some in the media and many of his critics pounced on the moment to accuse him of being irresponsible. Caitlin Collins at CNN said, only days into his diagnosis, the first thing the president does when he gets back to the White House is take his mask off. Kirstie Alley had this to say, and I'm going to have to edit, so just bear with me, all right? She said, what would you like him to do? Start crying like a little bleep so you can report he's crying like a little beep? He could have a hazmat suit on, and you'd report he's a bleeping lunatic in a hazmat suit. You hate him. Just report that. Wow. Caitlin Collins has been accused of being a faker by the president himself in a previous kerfuffle, where she was caught pulling off her mask when she thought the cameras were off. After she'd criticized the administration for the same offense, she tweeted later that she'd only taken off her mask for 6 seconds. You've probably seen the video, right? I know I have. And she's done it more than once. I've seen two different videos of her where at the end of the press conference, the president and everybody's left the room and everybody's getting up and gathering their things and milling about. And she reaches up and takes off her mask. Now, she wears it while she's on camera, but when she thinks nobody's looking, she doesn't. Kirstie Alley also criticized the Democrats in an earlier tweet that mocked them for spending all their time trying to take Trump down. She tweeted, the truth is, Dems have accomplished nothing in the last 3.5 years other than devising ways to take Trump down. You've been a waste of our tax dollars, time, and faith. Even with all your attempts to destroy him, you failed. After the president made an appearance outside the White House, he tweeted a video from his social media account encouraging Americans not to be afraid of the coronavirus. He said, one thing that's for certain, don't let it dominate you. Don't be afraid of it. You're gonna beat it. We're going back. We're going back to work. We're going to be out front. But don't let it dominate your lives. Get out there. Be careful. He's absolutely right. Be smart and get on with your life. Be smart, be careful, go out and live your life. I had a story in the mix yesterday. Let me see if I still got that here. Do I still have actually? Oh, yeah, I do. There it is. It's actually in the stack. Let me slide it up here, and we will get this one up next about the coronavirus. And this comes from, let's see here. Where does it come from? Oh, it's also from The Blaze. A story by Chris Field. NBC News did something last week that a lot of mainstream media outlets have not. They reported on Sweden's controversial response to the coronavirus pandemic while simultaneously noting that the country lately has been faring better than many of its European neighbors. NBC even went so far as to ask if there are lessons the United States can take from Sweden's experience. Now, we've talked about Sweden here before. What Sweden did was, rather than locking everything down, they told everybody what was going on and gave them some advice and told them, be responsible. And that's pretty much what they did. They told the people to be responsible, to protect the most vulnerable, and get on with your life, essentially. And what happened? They're doing fine. The Nordic country's been under fire from much of the world for its refusal to lock down during the global pandemic. But life there appears to be back to normal. That's what Bill Neely reported last Thursday on the Today show on NBC. He says, it looks like the world we lost. Cafes and restaurants are full. People relaxed. No fakes, face masks. No panic. The Swedes had very few rules and restrictions on their daily lives, keeping most schools and businesses open while asking people to socially distance. It did, however, ban large gatherings, although that's one of the very few restrictions it imposed. And the people there, including some Americans, seemed to be good with it. In fact, NBC News wondered if there was a lesson in it for the United States. Indeed, as the show's on-screen graphics, the Chiron posed the question, pandemic roadmap for U.S.? Mr. Neely spoke to Americans currently living in Sweden and gathered some positive takes on how the country's faring compared to the U.S. Elizabeth Dacey, an American living in Sweden, told NBC she feels safer there than back home. She said, I have to say, honestly, I'm glad I'm here in comparison to what I'm watching my family go through in the U.S. Jim Ferula of New York runs a deli in Sweden. He told NBC he also feels safer in Sweden than if he were back in the U.S. He said, I would say they're pretty much hands off here in Sweden as opposed to hands on. And he definitely feels safer in Sweden than he would in the U.S. He said, I'm kind of proud about the way we handled it here. And what about face masks? Those appear to be few and far between, including in close quarters on public transportation. Standing aboard a train, Neely noted, not a face mask in sight. The government doesn't recommend them. Why aren't they listening to the experts, some observers might ask? Well, according to NBC, Swedes do listen to the experts, and their experts are on the same page. Amina Manzur, a Swedish pandemic expert, told NBC that in Sweden, the government and the experts have been unified in their message. You haven't had that in the United States. It seems to be working out for the Swedes now. Following the spate of deaths the country saw last spring, when the world locked down, Sweden stayed open. Now some of the countries who had the toughest lockdowns, like Spain, are having a deadly second wave. Sweden is not. Neely went on to point out that the ICU in the nation's largest hospital, which has overwhelmed in the spring, is now deserted. And beginning last Thursday, nursing homes were opening for visitors for the first time in months. According to Neely, Sweden's number of COVID-19 cases is creeping up, but the people are not worried. He says most Swedes are confident their way works. One of the takeaways from this is about lockdowns and what happens later if you do lockdown. The lockdowns are just delaying the inevitable, and that is catching the coronavirus. And the news media is portraying the coronavirus as something that is deadly to everyone that catches it. They're focused on the number of cases. And they're not talking about the fact that most people who catch it, across the board, over 99%, survive. They may have a rough patch, but you're going to have a rough patch with the flu. Sometimes just the common cold will knock you flat on your back for a few days. And no, I'm not trying to equate something that has killed as many people as it has, or they claim it has, because I don't believe the numbers are accurate. I'm not trying to equate the two things. Trust me, I'm not. I realize this is different, that it impacts people differently. Everybody's individuals. Everybody responds to things a bit differently. Some people are going to have a hard time with it. My wife and I just recently had an old church friend who, he was in a care facility, Alzheimer's, and in the facility, he caught COVID-19, and he passed away. And he was in one of those groups. He's over in his 60s, mid to late 60s, I would say, and he was having issues anyway. And his system was compromised, and he caught the COVID, and it tipped him over the edge, and we lost him. But I got to be honest with you. I'm thinking here. I think he's the only person that my wife and I know who has passed away as a result of it. I think we know maybe two other people who've actually caught it. But if you watch the news, you would think that you're going to die if you touch somebody who's had it. You're going to die if you're exposed. And that's not the case. Not the case at all. When you have over 99% of the people who catch it surviving it, then that's not how it is. And so, as I've told you so many times before, the press, which thrives on sensationalism, is sensationalizing something that doesn't deserve it. Because we look at the example of Sweden, who refused to lock down because they felt that locking down would just mean when they opened back up again, people would catch it and there would be a second wave. And they were right. Contrasted with the United States, which locked down and may see another spike, but judging by what I have seen and probably what you have seen, how people in the real world have been responding to this, they haven't really been locked down and they haven't really been isolating themselves the way that it's been portrayed. Sure, some leftist governors in some leftist states, like California, have imposed severe lockdowns and made life impossible. They've destroyed businesses and the lives of business owners in the name of protecting people. And in those areas, when they finally do lift their lockdowns, we may see a whole nother wave of people becoming infected. But at the same time, I don't think we'll see another wave of death as high as we did before, because we know more now. And it's not as bad as they want you to believe. And that's why they won't report the reality of the situation. It's the Daily Perspective Podcast. Good to have you back. Thanks for being there. It's yeah, that's all you're going to get. It's, let's see, the final segment of the podcast. Wow, excuse me. And let's see here. I got a little distracted because I've been shuffling some things back and forth, trying to decide what to wrap up with. And that's because there's a handful of things I think are kind of important to talk about, but I think we're going to talk about this. There's an article from over at westernjournal.com. The article, let me look at the bottom of this and see where it is. Let's see. Okay. So it originated there. Sometimes the Western Journal reprints things that other places do, and I kind of like to give them credit if I can. But there's a leftist Harvard professor who is pushing a scenario you've probably seen trending on social media, that if you aren't aware of how things work, the scenario is scary. This guy, his name is Lawrence Tribe. You may have heard of him. He is a notoriously left-leaning Harvard law professor. He's one of the nation's foremost constitutional scholars. You might not agree with him, but he's been both massively prolific and influential in his work. For better or worse, Lawrence Tribe was the legal mentor of Barack Obama. That should tell you pretty much everything you need to know. He helped kill Robert Bork's nomination to the Supreme Court through his testimony before the Senate Judiciary Committee. He has argued a not insignificant number of cases before the Supreme Court. Conservatives may loathe him, but he's one of the most important legal minds of the past century. He's also a man who's come undone in the age of Donald Trump, using his Twitter account to spread misinformation about the president when he isn't coming up with his own. This is like watching the final years of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, when he became obsessed with the paranormal. He was convinced that fairies existed and had been captured on camera. You remember that, by the way, that was a hoax. If you didn't know that, it was two little girls who hoaxed some photographs of fairies, and people everywhere went, "Oh, they're real." And Sir Arthur Conan Doyle was one of them. Doyle wrote The Hound of the Baskervilles and not American constitutional law. He wasn't being invited on MSNBC to talk about the existence of those fairies. Thus, if you have heard the situation, if you heard the situation Tribe described on Joy Reid's MSNBC show Friday, what would happen if no presidential winner were declared by January 1st, 2021, due to delays or mail-in ballot difficulties? He said that House Speaker Nancy Pelosi would take office as the next president. If you saw that, you may have wondered whether this was him speaking as a constitutional scholar or as a man who could use a nice long rest. Well, the answer, well, it's not as crazy as you may think, but the situation also isn't as well thought out as you would expect from someone who is supposedly one of our top constitutional scholars. He said, there is a procedure. It's a very elaborate procedure in every state for resolving disputes by the date of the so-called safe harbor on December 8th. So really all of the efforts that Trump is making to both pretend that he can extend the date of the election, which everyone understands he can't do that, the date is set at November 3rd by act of Congress, all of that is designed simply to cast doubt in the way that Putin wants to, and the way that Steve Bannon has tried to do from time to time on the ability of our system to work. Now, as for the part about extending the date of the election, Tribe is accurate. Everyone understands by this point that the election isn't being postponed. The question is, what happens if the states haven't decided winners by the inauguration date? As for Putin and Bannon, this is Lawrence Tribe we're dealing with. There's always something lurking behind the Trump presidency. He said, they're trying to make it look chaotic, but there's a fail-safe mechanism built into the Constitution itself. That is, no matter how much dust he throws into the gears, at high noon on January 20th, 2021, if there has not been a new president elected at that point, Nancy Pelosi, Speaker of the House, becomes President of the United States. All of these enablers at that point would risk committing federal felonies if they were to exercise power which they no longer have, because Trump would no longer be president. And he went on to emphasize that the default solution in our system is President Nancy Pelosi. He said, you have made, I think, a lot of people's nights. Well, actually, Joy Reid said, you made a lot of people's nights. President Pelosi. So is he right? Well, the answer reveals the problem with the national mail-in voting. Maybe, sort of, well, we don't know. First, in terms of Pelosi becoming president in the event of a delayed election, for once, Snopes, their rundown on the matter is pretty accurate. Trump would have to leave office on January 20th, but Pelosi would have to leave earlier, on January 3rd, as would all 435 members of the House. Thus, the president would be president pro tempore of the Senate, next in line for the office. There would be 65 senators left sitting, a majority of them Democrats. They would likely select a Democrat to fill the Oval Office until the election was held. Of course, as WUSA-TV's set of constitutional scholars pointed out, the state governors would potentially fill those Senate seats. That's not going to happen, though. So the question is whether Pelosi would become the president if there were troubles counting mail-in ballots. The answer in that case is a shrug. We don't know how and when congressional races will be decided. Two Democratic Party primaries for House seats in New York City alone are still being decided. And those took place June 26th. Lawrence Tribe's answer, in short, isn't nutty. It also isn't nuanced. It would give us some of the frightening prospects that an election conducted by national mail-in voting might produce. And sorry, Joy Reid, but President Nancy Pelosi, probably not going to happen. That still doesn't mean we might be opening Pandora's box. Mail-in voting is a bad idea. It's an idea born of bad politicians. For bad reasons, for bad purposes. Mail-in voting is intended to create chaos. It's intended to create something which government has to step in and remedy. And the Democrats are counting on them being in the majority in order to fix the problem. And of course, by fixing the problem, they will appoint who they want. They will set things up to come out ahead. The Democrats are looking for any possible method of cheating the system in order to eliminate Donald Trump and have a Democrat in the White House. And at the very least, to cripple him in his second term if he does get elected. And that's something that happens frequently on second terms. First terms, presidents tend to get what they want. Second terms, not all the time, but often, presidents' hands get tied because they don't have the support of their party in the House and the Senate. We'll see what happens. But this amplifies the importance of getting out and voting, not being disgusted by this whole process, but doing something, getting out and voting. I've talked about this before, but the solution to putting down the Democrat effort to cheating their way through this election to eliminate Donald Trump is to show up and vote in person so that on election night, the Electoral College vote is decided. And that can happen, but it requires that we actually take action, that we do something, that we make it happen. We have to show up. We have to vote. And if you just can't, then you have to request an absentee ballot. Don't accept the ballots being sent out by the states. Request an absentee ballot. Complete the absentee ballot. And then hand deliver your absentee ballot to wherever it needs to go. That's what we have to do. Because we have to. We absolutely have to assure that the Electoral College is won on election night. There are only so many votes. And if Donald Trump crosses over 270 on election night, just on the power of those who go vote in person and who vote via absentee ballot the right way, then there's nothing that the Democrats can do. It's also equally as important that the Senate and the House be in Republican control. So it's extremely important to give the next 4 years to the Republican Party so that Donald Trump can continue to clean up the swamp and that he can realistically do things and prosecute the people who have been flaunting the law for the past, decades, and see real justice done in D.C. to those people who tried to overthrow our nation and make it a socialist stronghold. Hey, that's it for today. God bless you. Have a good one. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Oh, we're done.